To the show. You're listening to Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay Eric Taylor, hyped up for another show of sports talk. Give us a ring, 718-664-9098. Like always, get at us at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Maybe we'll get some of your emails on the air today. We'll see. Got a lot of stuff talking about people upset with Cano going to the Mariners, Ray. But also, check out rayandtaytoday.com. The website's interactive, just like Facebook and Twitter. We've got a lot of great photos, NFL, NBA standings, tweets, pictures. But tweet at us at rayandtaytoday and also like us on Facebook at rayandtaytoday. Ray, let them know, man. We got an interesting show with a different twist and a busy show.
Yeah, like always, Fridays are busy because we've got this big football weekend coming up. But, yeah, we'll go through the world of breaking news. So not that much happening in the world, but we'll talk about it. We'll also review the Thursday night football game last night. Ooh, some folks in Denver are a little bit salty. They don't control their own destiny anymore.
Superchargers.
Yeah, so people in New England are very happy right now. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the game. We'll talk about some injuries. We'll talk about other things happening in the NFL. We'll get into a quick Major League Baseball review. So hot stove, there's some signings and some transactions going on. And then we'll shift for a quick run around the NBA, as we like to do, because remember, folks, in January and February when football ends, we got to talk some NBA. So we'll talk some quick NBA talk. We'll hoop it up.
Yeah.
And then we'll bring you our segment. So we're actually going to do two segments. We're going to do what we call Top 5 Friday. So we're going to go through a Friday Top 5, and it's 10 tight ends in the NFL. We're going to go through the all-time tight ends in the NFL, and then we're going to combine it with Hall of Fame segment. So we're going to say which of the current tight ends can break that top five and almost by definition make it to the Hall of Fame. So
basically,
who are the new kids on the block at the tight end position who can break in to the top five of all time? So Top 5 Friday, and who are the new kids who can break in? So we'll do that, and then we'll preview the current NFL Week 15. So in real football, it's all about winning and getting to the playoffs. In fantasy football, you should be in your semifinals right now. It's all about winning fantasy if you're lucky or if you have skills. And then you can make it to the finals next week. So we got a lot to talk about. So let's jump into it. Let's start with last night's game. So talk to me about somebody sitting in Arizona.
Listen. I got to tell you, I was impressed. Not only Ryan Matthews, but the Chargers' defense. Corey Legit played a great game. Manti Te'o is starting to play some football, Ray. First time we've really mentioned him on the show this year. Shout out to all the Notre Dame alum. But what I thought was most fascinating, the rookie of the year showed up. He hurdled a guy. He did his Edwin Moses, got his touchdown, big touchdown before the half. And Keenan Allen is a future star. I think one thing we've learned in the NFL this year, we've got some young players that – at wide receiver and running back that are going to be really, really, and tight end future stars. And so the Chargers, I think what's fascinating about them is they're still alive, even though Ray wanted to give up on – Ray, listen, we got to call Ray out. He'd be giving up on his teams. His Chargers, his Cowboys, and his Jets, he's underestimated them all season, and probably rightfully so because of how things are turning out now with that Cowboy loss Monday night, which was, depressing for Cowboy Nation. But I think for me, the Ravens, and we'll talk about it, right? Obviously, that's the Monday night game. They could lose, and the Dolphins could easily lose, and then you got a three-way tie for the sixth seed. We know that the tiebreaker goes to the Ravens. So kudos to the Chargers. Phillip Rivers was great. His cowboy boots, you know, being North Carolina in mad country, talking to Deion and the boys was hilarious after the game. And he tied Vince Young for the record of the only quarterback to ever beat both Mannings back-to-back weeks. So kudos
you know
to the Chargers.
To me, what was interesting to me about this game was that Denver scored 10 points in the first quarter. And usually when Denver does that, they then put on the afterburners and they run away from teams and they'll put up 42. So kudos for the Chargers in Denver and the Chargers D, and give Pagano, the defensive coordinator for the Chargers, credit.
Yep, John Pagano.
They held
they weren't
the
having
Broncos
it.
Scoreless in the second and third quarters, and then the Broncos ended up scoring 10 in the fourth to make it somewhat close, but they ended up picking. They ended up getting a pass rusher on Peyton, hitting his arm, and then picking him off with about 5.5 minutes to go. So, really, kudos to the Chargers D. Good for them.
Played a great game. They played
exactly.
a great
in
game
in Denver, holding Manning to 289, which still sounds like a lot of yards. But
and
289,
what was it, 18 yards rushing,
41 attempts. Right, and then the bigger the bigger display of defense was rushing. 11 attempts for 18 yards, and they just couldn't run the ball.
Yeah, and time of possession was key, and you know, not just eating up the clock, but you run the ball 44 times, and I think they had what, like, total 178 yards rushing. That's dominance, and they. I got to tell you, this is the flaw that I have with the Broncos. Now, granted, you have Broncos Niners Super Bowl. I have Niners Texans. Texans are gone. But I'll say this. The reason why I did not pick the Broncos is because I think their defense, to me, it was missing something, and I think it still is. Phillips and Miller can get to the quarterback. They haven't been doing it the way that they should. But the secondary is sort of suspect, as we saw in so many games this year with the Giants, the Cowboys. You can score on the Broncos, but you could also pound them and run the ball. And if you do that and then get any pressure, real pressure up the middle, especially on Manning, you have the way to beat them. So, hey, let's not beat it with a horse. It's one game. Broncos are still, you know, probably still going to get the one seed. But like you said, they're not in the driver's seat. So let's move around. Give me some of the latest. We got to talk about baseball. The Mariners, I think, are trying to make some other moves so they don't just get Cano. Ownership looks like they want to spend some money. What's the latest in Hot Stove and who's moving where? Anything gone down today or in the last couple of days that the baseball fans need to know about?
There's some interesting little deals. David Ortiz looking to re-up for 1 year with the Red Sox. Jabba Chamberlain signed. So all those Yankee fans out there like Ray and Tay, Jabba Chamberlain signs a one-year deal with the Tigers.
That was kind of hurtful. I feel like he was ours. Do you know what I mean? In a sense.
Yeah, but if you don't produce on the field, you know, that's it. He needs a new place. The Yankees need to move on. And so I think it's fine. I think it's good for both teams. The Yankees turned down Brett Gardner for Phillips' deal.
Brandon Phillips, yeah.
And
what do you think about that? We haven't spoke about that off air because even though they got Kelly Johnson, I like Phillips. I think Phillips is nice.
Yeah, he drove in 103 runs, which is the most he's ever driven in, right, as a second baseman. But his batting average and his on-base percentage have gone down every year, and he still has 4 more years at $50 million left. So you're really getting him on the backside of his career. So if the Yankees are already stuck with potentially Sabathia and Teixeira, and then
you probably don't
want
that contract
in the back end of his career, I don't know. And you already got Vernon Wells and Ichiro and all these guys and Carlos Beltran. I mean, get some youth. I mean, I hate to say it, but the
we're
Yankees.
Scared of the youth.
Oh, my God. They need a youth movement. First of all, where's the farm system? And second of all, the Yankees in general. I mean, the average age on the Yankees must be about 35 right now, which in baseball terms, that's old. So,
yeah, let me ask you this.
What
the Mets are talking about? They're in some serious discussions with the Braves about moving Ike Davis. Do you keep Mike Davis? I don't think he's, you know, he's not at a place where he's making, you know, big money.
He might
but
need a change of location.
Yeah,
he
his bat's not
hit.
Consistent.
I mean, when he hits, it goes.
He hits, but then when he doesn't, yeah.
Yeah, he's hitting about 200. He plays a pretty good first base, right? He's a natural
he's
lefty,
glove, yeah.
So he's a
yeah.
good first baseman. Maybe he just needs a change of scenery. But where is he going to go if he goes?
To the Braves, potentially.
To Atlanta, but they have Freddie Freeman. I mean, I don't know where they put him, though.
Yeah,
because he really can only play first base. And if it's not a National League team, you know, you don't have that extra – if it's not an American League team, you don't have that extra DH spot open to him. So maybe
right.
that means he's a role player.
In the winter meetings, we got to let the fans know, they're, you know, boosting up replay, but they're also getting rid of collisions at home plate. Probably
yeah.
a good thing, you know, when you think about Buster Posey. I don't know. I mean, to me, I think it's a no-brainer to use the technology and have replay. There were so many games, you know, that were this major sports center topics on ESPN where people were going crazy because, you know, the umpires got it wrong. Granted, they're right the majority of the time, but I think if we have the technology, you have got to use it.
Well, you
and
saw
then
the
one
replay is going to be limited, though. It's not going to be a blanket replay system. So
no,
you're not
no,
going to have hit-by-pitches on replay. You're not going to have fair foul on replay. You're not going to have the neighborhood play, which happens most at second base, on replay. So I don't know. Bud Selig's always held back on replay, and I feel like they're doing it halfway.
They do it. You're right. They do it halfway. Let me ask you this real quick before we move on. The Rockies are signing Boone Logan. How do you like that?
You know,
it's not bad for the Rockies. They're trying to make some moves.
A call it to the show, G, and it's for over $5 million a year or something like that. A call it to the show, G Money once called in, and he kept saying, all you need to do if you're a left-handed pitcher is just get one guy out a game, and you can make it for 20 years in the majors. So Boone Logan, good for him, left-handed specialist. His job was to try and get David Ortiz out, essentially, for the Yankees. And he comes out to the desert and signs himself a nice 3-year deal. So good for him. I like Boone Logan. I think he's a good, solid pitcher. He's a role player for the 6th or 7th inning to get a lefty out, but good for him.
So let's go over to some hoops, man. I mean, before we get to the NBA, I guess in college the only thing that we really need to talk about is sort of looking at this game coming up. Which blue is better, Carolina blue or Kentucky blue? 5:15, random start on Saturday.
ESPN has been promoting this for 2 weeks, so they better get good ratings. They've been pumping it out.
What do you think, though? I mean, look, I mean, obviously – you know, we're like, what, week 6 of college hoops now. It's still early. But I got to tell you, I like Paige for the Tar Heels. And I think Julius Randle, who had 7 double-doubles and then, you know, has gone on a 2-3 game sort of, you know, not, I don't want to say a bad streak. But, you know, these young, talented guys and then, you know, your boy who dyed his hair, Paulie Stein, I mean, I don't like the hairstyle, but he's blocking shots. I mean, he had, what, I think 6 block shots last game. I think, you know, Kentucky is one of those teams where if they potentially develop right with their youth, they're, you know, they're going to be there at the end, probably in at least the Elite Eight or Final Four. I don't know if we can say that about our Tar Heels.
No, I think this is one of those off seasons for the Tar Heels, unfortunately. That schizophrenia we talked about, right? You beat Louisville, you know, and you beat Michigan State, and then you lose
mm-hmm.
to unranked teams. So the youth is definitely being served in Carolina and in Kentucky. I think I will take the talent, right? If they're both young – and they're both having, and Carolina doesn't quite have their chemistry yet. Even though, you know, we're big Carolina fans, I think Kentucky's youth is a little bit more talented than Carolina's youth. So I'm looking for Kentucky in this game on Saturday, but I'll be watching.
Yeah, that's kind of what I want to say. I'm kind of curious. So let's go to the clapboards, where in the NBA last night, we saw two interesting things. Number one, everybody knows the Clippers are on their, you know, reunion tour. They go and beat Boston the other night, and then last night they lose to the Nets. Number one, I like Pierce sort of getting back into the lineup, but I actually like him as a sixth man. I don't know if you always want to start Allen Anderson. Maybe it's Kirilenko when he gets healthy. But the Brooklyn Nets are looking like, you know, 102-93 win, but like they're starting to get it together. And I still see with the Clippers, even though DeAndre Jordan is more improved, Blake Griffin's hitting the 15-18-foot jumper, Chris Paul manages the team. You know, I think they miss Redick. You know, he'll be back. Crawford is lights out. But you saw, I guess, the concern that we've had for the last couple years and, you know, we still have for this year with the Clipper team, big baskets down the end, and also just, I don't know, sometimes defensive intensity. And sometimes they just don't have it. And I know that drives Doc Rivers crazy because that's what he preaches is defense. What do you think about the Net-Clipper game? And do you think the Nets now can turn it around as they get healthy?
So the Nets and the Clippers basically meant more to the Nets. The Nets, the Clippers are in a pretty tough road trip. And the Nets really needed this game. And this was the first three-game winning streak of the Nets for the Nets this year, and obviously of Jason Kidd's young coaching career. So the Nets really needed to have this game. Paul Pierce coming off the bench is an interesting experiment. I don't know if that's a long-term solution, but try it out. The good thing about the Nets is that they play in the Eastern Conference, and the Eastern Conference is terrible. And the Nets are a game and a half out of the playoffs, and I think they're three games out of the fourth seed. So that just tells you how bad and how condensed the Eastern Conference is. So
right behind Brooklyn.
Nets,
I mean, right behind Boston, 10-14,
and
they're 8-14.
Allen Anderson, that's a question if he starts consistently. But here's what I liked about the Nets, right? Andre Blatch gave you 21 off the bench, and he did it on 11 shots, right? 21.
Right. And Lopez will probably be out tonight.
He turned his ankle, went in, came out, you know, and so forth. But really, the engine that makes that team go is Deron Williams. I mean, Brooke Lopez too, but Deron Williams. So if Deron Williams is healthy and you can get some productivity off the bench and the Eastern Conference is so bad, I feel like the Nets can sleep well at night and say, look, nobody's running away from us. We could still be the 3 seed, the 4 seed. You know,
right here, dog.
Exactly. And still have a whole playoff series or two. So while Brooklyn is still not yet the mecca of basketball in New York and a crazy home court advantage, I still think the Nets realistically can play for the playoffs and potentially even home court in the first round. So the Nets are fine. I think they're veteran talent. It'll be hard to motivate them for 82 games, but I do think that down the stretch, starting in February or March, they'll turn it on. They'll be okay. They just need to be in contention until then, and then Jason will figure out a way to manage the minutes while still winning enough games to get one of those top, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 seeds. So
I got to tease you for a second, though. So real quick, Pacers beat the Heat this week. It was a good win. The Bulls are dropping. They're down to the 8th seed at 8-12. You know, and then you've got the Michael Jordan Charlotte Bobcats with the 5th seed at 10-12. And, the Hawks at 11-11 with the 3 seed. So you only got really two teams balling out in the East, and the Heat and the Pacers. I like the win by the Pacers. The Heat tried to downplay it going into it. But a couple things. So they're talking about Wednesday in Miami. So we will definitely talk about that on Monday and preview that and look forward to that. But the one thing I like about the East is I like sort of new blood. You know, you kind of – and you're getting it in the West too. But I definitely like to see – and would like to see. I don't want to see Chicago make the playoffs without Rose, really, if they can't, you know, do anything because they've just always been there. So, you know, let the Pistons develop or do something. Let the Bobcats, you know, I'm not saying let, right, but it's nice as a fan, you know, and of course we still want the Knicks and Nets to pull it together and make it. I think Rondo coming back will probably wind up giving the Celtics a chance. You know, there were some rumors and they were saying Dolan vetoed and, you know, this whole trade of the Knicks, you know, potentially getting Lowry. But I think the Eastern Conference is going to be one of those things where in the next month, you know, as we get into Christmas and January, you're going to see Cleveland wake up. You're going to see the Knicks and Brooklyn wake up. So it's going to be interesting to see how the positioning plays out and develops, right? Everybody's only at 20, 23, 24 games now. But last night, what I saw in the West, and I just wanted to sort of say this to you and all the listeners, is beautiful basketball. The Blazers-Rockets was not only an entertaining game, but you're seeing Harden do his thing. You see Howard drop 31 and like 17. LaMarcus Aldridge, Lillard, my boy, didn't play so great, but they still won. The Blazers still won. But LaMarcus, we talked about it on the show, he got 31. This is the career high for any Blazer in terms of the more than, you know, the double-double. 31 points and 25 rebounds. Two assists, two steals, two block shots. Ray, and you got like Mo Williams off the bench in that role. He's the Blazers and Darrell Wright. I mean, they've got the right nucleus. Is it time to really? I mean, obviously the number one in the West at, you know, 19-4. Is it time to say, not only is he an All Star and an MVP candidate as the fans are cheering, but how real are the Blazers? With a solid win
to
over the Rockets.
To be determined how real they are, but you know what? I know one thing for real, for sure, that if they gave out MVPs in the East and in the West, the East race is between Paul George and LeBron right now, and the West race is LaMarcus Aldridge, hands down. I mean, this guy is the best player on the best team or the most improved, most important, and the guy who's producing the best on a Western Conference team. Now, you could argue Kevin Love probably has slightly better statistics, but this guy, LaMarcus Aldridge, for a guy that historically was considered to be soft and wasn't a great rebounder, this guy's averaging 10.5 rebounds a game, and he's averaging 23 points per game. So there's really nothing that this guy can't do, and now let's see if he can carry his team. Let's see if this guy who, you know, historically was one level below, and it's healthy. Let's see, he's historically one level below. He's an 18-8 guy, and this year he's 23.5 and 10.5. So let's see if this guy can carry his team and really say, look, we are putting our stamp on this Western Conference. My gut feeling is that they're still maybe a year or a player away, but right now they're the best record in the West. So they're not doing anything.
They'll remain a top four seed. I really believe that. I don't think this is a fluke.
I think when the dust settles, look, it's not a fluke to finish fifth or sixth in the West, right? These are
right.
Some fantastic teams.
Every night's a war.
Yeah.
Well, two things.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. I haven't heard word, and I got to check it out. I don't know. When is Gasol coming back from Memphis? Because that's going to be interesting in terms of them sort of waking up. Because now at 10 and 11, they're sort of like, you know, in sort of the mix with the Pelicans and Dallas and all these other teams sort of battling for anywhere from 8 to 15 in the West, right? All these teams, the Lakers included, Golden State is holding on to 8. But guess what? Phoenix, Arizona, stand up, Suns, the seventh seed at 12-9. Is Jeff Hornacek going to be the coach of the year, baby?
He might be.
You might give
all the awards to Portland, but if you didn't, then Jeff Hornacek needs to be considered. Although, I'm not sure they hold on to the playoffs because, like, your Dallas team. They're even ahead of Golden State, which you got to think Golden State.
Hey, that's going to be the – we'll probably start it on Monday, right, Ray? But we got this new segment, Doing More with Less. And we're going to give you a couple of definitions in different sports because over the time and the years, whether it's Iverson or Cam Newton, just so many different guys and coaches have done more with less. Well, that's sort of where we are with Hornacek and the Suns. So it's interesting. We'll see how it plays out. I got to believe, though, I'll tell you this real quick, talking about tonight's games, I got to believe the Knicks seek revenge for that 41 or 40-point loss to the Celtics and go to Boston and smack them up tonight. What do you think about that for all the Knicks fans out there?
Yeah, look, I think Boston is an underrated team. I think that they're actually
playing pretty
well without, you know, they're in, quote unquote, in fourth place if the playoffs were to end today, but they're 10-14. But this team is doing quite okay without their best player. And with a new head coach, a first-time NBA coach, and a guy coming from college, Brad Stevens, Jordan Crawford's playing great at the point. They're getting some, you know, excellent minutes from the rest of their backcourt guys, Courtney Lee and Avery Bradley. But Jeff Green and Jared Sullinger are carrying that team, and they're playing great basketball. So if and when Rondo comes back, this Boston team is not bad. This Boston team's all right. Now, they embarrassed the Knicks a couple Sundays ago, and the Knicks will probably take out their frustrations while everybody was watching football. Quiet as kept. The Celtics put it on the Knicks. So I think the Knicks are
making
Jordan
Crawford look like an all-star, right?
He did. He's got to get.
What's wrong with Ray Felton? That's my question.
Well, he's hurt now. His hamstring is hurt, and now that Knicks are talking about all kinds of other replacements at the point guard position, I don't know. It felt like he's had two or three stretches with the Knicks where he was fantastic and perfect fit and pick and roll, and he was the leader of that team. And we're still trying to get Raymond on the show, and he's a good guy, does a lot of work in the community, does some charitable stuff, so very good guy. I just feel like the ups and downs of his career as a Knick, you know, you feel like he's on a trajectory, and I hate to do it to him, but I compare him to his fellow Carolina guard, Ty Lawson, and Ty's career has just gone up and up and up.
I think Ty's at a place where he's pretty stable now, though.
Ty Lawson is an all-star, and like Derek Harper, I think his first 6 or 7 years, he's improved in points and assists every year to the point where the guy's averaging almost 20-9. So Ty Lawson is fantastic. All I'm saying is if you were to put those two together, and by the way, Ty Lawson was traded to Denver. He was a mid-first round pick, and he was traded to Denver. And Raymond Felton had won the national championship, and he was a top five pick. And I just feel like Raymond's career has been up and down and up and down and up and down, whereas Ty Lawson's career has just kind of gone up and up and up and up. So I don't know. The bottom line is I don't know what's with Raymond. I still think he can play, and I still think he can contribute to the Knicks. Look, he's not an elite point guard, but he's certainly a very good, you know, decent.
Were you encouraged
NBA
by Amari? Amari had a pretty good game against the Bulls.
Very encouraged by Amari. Look, Amari has to learn who he is. Or that's not true.
The
Knicks
new Amari.
Knicks fans need to learn who Amari is. Amari was never a defensive player. And so when he's on the court with Kenyon Martin, you know, at least Kenyon can block a few shots. I don't know if you saw where he blocked like four shots in 4 or 5 minutes. But Amari
when we lost those two games. Martin was out. So, you know, be fair.
Amari is an off-the-bench offensive threat. If he can give us 15 or 16 points in 25 to 30 minutes a game, that's great. You know, front court scoring is something that we've had problems with. And certainly Tyson Chandler's not that great offensively. Kenyon Martin's not that great offensively. So really our Andrea Bargnani and, of course, Carmelo are the two front court scorers for the Knicks. So if we were to add Amari and get 15, 16 a game from him off the bench, hitting those 17-foot jumpers, getting those putbacks, finishes, I'm happy with that. That's the new Amari. That's who we're not getting the Amari of 5-6 years ago from Phoenix. That's just not – it's not going to happen.
And that's okay.
Okay. For the next 2 years, if we can get that from him, I'm happy.
Well, you know what? Let's keep it moving. Let's take a quick break, and let's get into Top 5 Fridays and look at the best tight ends of all time. We'll be right back. Ray and Tay, check this out.
Yo, this is Pablo Francisco. You know what? When I want the sports, all the best updates, I go to Ray and Tay. That's right. All sports. All good. Yeah.
Well, Listen to Pablo. He knows what he's talking about. He's a funny comedian. So if you want to hear some comedy, go listen to Pablo Francisco. Find him live in your town. Find him online, YouTube. Check him out. He's a friend of the show. He's a funny guy.
Very, very, very funny. And, you know, appreciate his love. So let's talk about it. Let's debate it. I think we sort of agree on some of it and sort of disagree on some else, on some of it. So perfect segue from Monday Night Football. You know, they honored the guy at halftime, Coach Ditka, Mike Ditka. Well, he was a coach for the Bears, but he played tight end for the Bears and Cowboys and was the first tight end inducted into the Hall of Fame. But Mike Ditka was a baller, shot caller. And I'd have to say he's not the number one tight end in the NFL, but he is definitely in the top five. Where would you say we'd have to, when you look at the numbers and look at the different stats, where would you have to rank Mike Ditka as one of the top five tight ends of all time? Because, you know what, he's got to be on the list.
So at first I was afraid. I was petrified. I didn't know if
right.
Mike was going to make the top five. But the more I thought about it and the more I asked myself, self, where does Mike Ditka fit in here given all that he's – and I'm not even putting his coaching. I'm talking about strictly on the field as a player.
Yeah.
Now, it could be that in 5 years he'll drop – if guys like Jason Witten, Rob Gronkowski, Antonio Gates push him down, Jimmy Graham potentially in 5 to 10 years. But right now, the only guy in the modern era that needs to be considered is, to me, the best tight end of all time is Tony Gonzalez. So he to me, and I think you'd agree with this, is number one overall, right?
Yeah.
Best tight end
Tony
of all time.
Tony, for both of us, yeah, he's number one. So, I mean, we got to give him his props. You wish that he played in the Super Bowl, and you wish that maybe they traded him back to Kansas City so he would have had a shot this year. But he's one of the leading receivers in NFL history, let alone tight ends.
Number two in
yeah.
receptions behind Jerry Rice, 1,307 receptions, 14,946 yards, 109 touchdowns. I wrote down
amazing.
The stats. So just so we have them. So, yeah, Tony Gonzalez, number one. So I think that's no doubt. So the question is, now you start to ask yourself philosophically, where do you put the tight ends of the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and then Shannon Sharp, too, 90s,
yeah.
Because their numbers
are
not going
to
be as gaudy as if they continue this way, Antonio Gates, Jason Witten, Gronkowski, and Graham. If they
because
stay
Gates
healthy,
is
maybe,
number two all-time on touchdowns. For tight ends. He's number two now, which is amazing.
86 touchdowns. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
So, really unbelievable. So
especially considering all the games he's missed from injuries. Let's let people know with the toes. I mean, he's missed the equivalent of at least one NFL season in terms of games. So,
right.
I mean, that's a lot.
So to me, because of Antonio Gates being such a threat, I got to put Antonio Gates just a little bit ahead of Mike Ditka. But I got to give Mike Ditka credit, though. His rookie year was unbelievable. And the guy caught 56 passes for 1,076 yards and 12 touchdowns his rookie year when they didn't really throw the ball that much in the 60s. And by the way, in 1964, he caught 75 balls in a 14-game season, which was pretty remarkable. So
it was, yeah. Amazing.
This guy was
then.
Catching balls when they weren't throwing balls, right? It sounds ironic, right? They're catching balls and they're not even throwing balls. So to me, Mike Ditka's number four. I gotta put Ditka at number four. Your question surrounding Mike Ditka, right? Kellen Winslow, a guy who had an unbelievable career, only really had one deep run into the playoffs, but this guy was unbelievable. He had that unbelievable 1981 season and that 81 AFC Championship
playoffs
game against Miami.
Charter, yeah. He blocked the field goal.
Blocked
the
field goal. 13 catches for 166. Was taken off the field a couple times with exhaustion down there in the Orange Bowl in Miami. So Kellen Winslow, Shannon Sharp, Ozzie Newsome, Mike Ditka, Antonio Gates. To me, they're all, I don't want to say interchangeable, but they're all that next level, right?
Right.
Tony Gonzalez
and, you know,
is number one, and they're all fighting for two.
Well, let me
five.
Ask you this, right? We got to throw this in there. We got to throw in someone who, you know, I believe broke a record last year for receptions for tight ends in Jason Witten. Hard hitting Jason Witten for the Cowboys. To me, Jason Witten, you know, in receptions, he's what, 18th all time. And
18th
so,
all time.
You know, when you have a tight end that's, you know, ahead of, like, wide receivers like Irving Fryer and, you know, just the fact that he's in the top 20, Jason Witten, I think, goes in that same debate and same category. And when we look at the old tight ends, and, you know, we love Ozzie Newsome. You got to even look back to, you know, John Mackey, you know, playing with the Colts. You've got, you know, I think some of these guys like Dave Casper with the Raiders. Realistically, these guys, if they played in this era where it's, you know, so pass happy and the rules favor the offense so much, you got to believe that these guys, Newsome, Casper, they would easily, you know, have some of these stats. I mean, you can't tell me that Witten is just straight out better than Dave Casper. You know what I mean?
No. And shout out to Todd Christensen, by the way, who passed away a couple weeks
peace.
Ago.
Yeah.
Our boy.
Yeah.
From the Raiders.
So let's try to throw 3, 4, and 5 in there. So we got Gonzalez and we got Winslow. I think we could go to any debate, any argument, you know, talk to any tight ends, and they'll say that and agree with that. Right now on receptions, you know, because it's still counting, Antonio Gates is 39th, just in, you know, in receptions for, you know, receivers all time, which is ridiculous in itself. So let me ask you this, Shannon Sharp. Do you take a Shannon Sharp over a Gates, over Vernon Davis, Witten, these guys that are, you know, we won't even throw in Gronk and Graham yet, unless, you know, we want to project out. How good, because people might not remember, and I think we saw his whole career, Shannon Sharp is not only a Hall of Famer, but has got rings, was dominant in Baltimore.
Three
and
of them, yep.
Yeah.
So I think Shannon Sharp is at the bottom of that list. So you've got that list where he's probably number 5 or 6.
Yeah.
He didn't block.
Wasn't the best run blocker, yeah.
He didn't block, so that takes something away from him, because you're not a receiver at the end of the – you're not a wide receiver, I should say. You're a pass-catching tight end. So he didn't block, which to me takes like a half a demerit off of him. So he's at the bottom of that list. Of that next tier of tight ends. So Mike Ditka and you know, guys like Antonio Gates. The thing with me is that he was a dynamic pass catcher, which is something that, to me, that Jason Witten isn't. Jason Witten moves the chains, and
right.
You know that he can hurt you, but you don't scheme to stop him. You scheme
no.
to stop no. Antonio Gates. You scheme to stop Jimmy Graham. You scheme to stop Rob Gronkowski. You don't scheme to stop Jason Witten. So you hope he doesn't kill you, but he's not that dynamic where you're scared of Jason Witten. So to me, Jason Witten is kind of outside of that top 5 or 6. Shannon Sharp is maybe a little bit ahead of him. Jason Witten does more in the running game. So that's why I give him a little bit of a bump up. But to me, you
right.
bump Shannon a little bit down. So number 3 to me, so if you figure Gonzalez and Winslow are 1 and 2, number 3 to me is between, you know, Mike Ditka, Shannon Sharp, Ozzie Newsome, and Antonio Gates.
Yeah.
Right?
And for me, I'd actually have to move Ditka to 4, and I would go with Ozzie Newsome. I think
at
Ozzie
3?
Newsome. Yeah, I think Ozzie Newsome did enough in the blocking game and was so dynamic as a receiver. I think he was the first to sort of take it to that next level, Newsome and then Winslow, of being, you know, more of an athletic. And he's a big guy too, Newsome. But remember, he helped Mack and Beiner in their running game and helped them get to AFC championships, which, of course, with Bernie Kosar, which they wound up losing to the Broncos. But I think Newsom and then Dicka, I think, would have to go 3 and 4 for me. I think the question is projecting out, right? Does Graham and Gronkowski, Davis and Vernon Davis, could they surpass Sharp and Gates to be 5? Probably so. I mean,
yeah, I don't know that Vernon Davis does, but those other two are just they can
stay
healthy.
So you give Gates, you give it to Gates over Davis.
I'll give it to Gates over Vernon Davis. Yes, I give it to
That's
Gates
fair.
Over Shannon
That's
Sharp
fair.
Even. But those two are just
right.
unbelievable. I mean, they're special. Look, for about 8 or 9 weeks out of the season, Jimmy Graham was the best player in football. He was just that unstoppable. Now, problem is,
right.
you know, once again, he had the ankle problem, and he always seems to get hurt.
Well, he's more healthy. Gronk is harder for us to measure because the reality is we don't know how long he'll continue. But, I mean, look at, like, Ozzie Newsome, right? He's 49th all-time in receptions. And, you know, from 78 to 90 played, 662 receptions. To be in the top 50 with, you know, receivers, I mean, he's ahead of Roddy White. Goodness gracious. I mean,
right.
that's amazing to me. So, okay, so let's be fair. So we'll say Gates. So at number 5, you know, because we could debate it forever, right now, we'll hold off on Gronk and Jimmy Graham. At number 5, do we right now have to give it to Shannon Sharp?
Or Mike Ditka?
Have to go Ditka over Sharp.
Yeah, two different eras.
I think Sharp was more dynamic, but he didn't give you the blocking, and I think Dicka did a little bit of both. So Sharp would be 6, and then obviously you fill in with, you know, Graham. I'd give Graham the edge over Gronkowski, you know, and then, you know, you throw in, you know,
John
Sharp,
Mackey,
Gates,
throw
Mackey.
In a guy, yeah, Jason Witten. That next 5 is a pretty good 5. I mean, don't sleep on 6 to 10. You know, they're still excellent players.
Give me a guy that we haven't mentioned, like a Jordan Cameron, a Jared Cook. Give me one young tight end out there. Graham and Gronk have been doing it a couple of years. You know, Aaron Hernandez is no more considered anything. Who could potentially be a top 10 tight end?
Wow.
Is Graham just sort of a flash in the pan?
No, I think if they stay
never developed.
I think if they stay healthy, Graham and Gronkowski are Hall of Famers. So,
oh, no, definitely.
I think they're great. So to me, the one
like
who
a Jordan
looks,
Cameron.
Yeah, I was about to say, the one who looks the best is Jordan Cameron. I mean, this guy is a pass catcher. This guy is a talented young player who looks like he has nothing but upside. Maybe he takes on a little bit of the toughness playing in Cleveland of an Ozzie Newsome.
He's no Frank Wycheck, the Titans. 505 receptions. I had to mention him. Yo, Terps. You know, you shot out a Wycheck and a Todd Heap. There's some guys, who, you know, Ben Coates. You just got to give some love to some of these great tight ends over the years.
Dave
but,
Casper, the ghost.
Yeah, he's definitely up there. So, all right, so let's just run it down. Our top 5 for Ray and Tay right now. Number 1.
Tony Gonzalez. No questions asked.
Kellen Winslow, 2. Number 3. We're giving it to.
Well, see, this is the one that was hotly debated. But
we gave it to Gates.
Give it to Antonio Gates, yeah, I think.
Right,
so.
And then 4, Dicka, and 5, Shannon Sharp.
No, Ozzie Newsome, your boy Ozzie Newsome.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Okay, we gave it to Ozzie. And maybe a tie. Sharp is right behind Newsome. So, okay. So, you know, look, that's fair. It's fluid. You know, we'd even have to ask our boy George Reister, friend of the show, what he thinks about it. You know, next time we talk to him, we'll get him on. We got about 15 minutes left, man. We got to talk about the playoffs and these games. Week 15 in the NFL. Guess what? Jay Cutler is back. Rodgers, it doesn't look like he's going to go. Bears-Browns, first game we'll look at. Is it a mistake not going and staying with the hot hand, or is it just a no-brainer that you have to go back to Cutler, who was having a pretty solid season? What do you think about that? And then I'll just say for me real quick, I think the Bears win a close game because I think Cleveland is underrated, and they've been Josh Gordon has been the best player in the NFL the last couple of weeks. And I say the Bears win 30-27 in an explosive game in Cleveland.
So
break it down for me.
Football-wise, I think it's the wrong decision to start Jay Cutler. I think that Josh McCown earned himself the right to play. If Robbie Gould hits a 46-yard field goal, he's 4-1. So he really should be 4-1. They should have beaten Minnesota. So they're 4-1, and Jay Cutler's 4-4. Josh McCown earned it, and he should be the starting quarterback until he starts to falter, and then you pull him in. So that's from a football perspective. But the Bears as a franchise need to figure out if they want to give this guy $100 million and, you know, $45 to $55 million guaranteed. So he'll get Tony Romo-type money. So I understand also the GM's perspective basically saying, look, this guy gets three games plus the playoffs to determine if we franchise him for 1 year or if we sign him to the big deal for 5 or 6 years. So I get from an organizational standpoint, the Bears almost have to get a better look at Jay Cutler. Personally, from a football standpoint, McCown deserves it. So having said that, they're in Cleveland. I actually think the Cleveland Browns are going to win. The Browns have played well enough to win more games than they have. They're a decent team. Of course, we knocked it when they traded Trent Richardson, but look, Trent Richardson's doing nothing in Indianapolis. He's backing up Brown. So this team's got some heart. This team at home, they go at it, and they play tough. They're only 4-9, but you know what? I think they're 3-4 at home. I think they win this game. I think they take care of business. A close game. I think Cutler tries to do too much, trying to come back, prove that he's the man. He might throw an interception or two, try to fit the ball into that small window with his rifle of an arm. So I like the Browns in this game. I like the Browns in this game 24-23.
All right. We got the New England Patriots at the Miami Dolphins. Huge game for both teams. Obviously, Miami's right there in the mix. Division game. They've had their problems all year. The Patriots adjusting without Gronk. Seeing what Amendola Edelman can do. Vereen has been back. You don't know. You know, Belichick is sort of kind of crazy with the running backs. Will Ridley do it? Will Blunt do it? I think it doesn't matter. Brady will do it. And for me, I know this is, you know, the Dolphins had a big win in Pittsburgh, knocked out the Steelers, kept their hopes alive. They're at home. But I just think Brady, who potentially doing more with less, could easily be the MVP and could wind up stealing it for some strange reason if Denver ever crumbles and the Patriots get the number one seed. Because what Brady's done this year with just a mess of a team is amazing, and Belichick as well. They're going to go down as just the best coach and quarterback team, you know, I think, ever. And I'll take the Patriots knocking the Dolphins out of the playoffs, and it will just be between the Ravens and Chargers. I take the Patriots in a good, good game, 27-23.
Yeah, I like the Patriots, too. I mean, I think fundamentally the Dolphins are playing better than anybody expected, especially given that they lost two offensive linemen a few weeks ago with the whole lineman scandal. So I think the Patriots know how to play the Dolphins. Dolphins know how to play the Patriots, too. But I think that Belichick will find a way to take advantage of the weaknesses that the Dolphins have. I think the Patriots win pretty easily, actually. I think they win 30-20.
30-20. That's fair. So let's keep it moving. You know, some of these teams and games are pretty obvious. You know, you'd think the Niners and Seattle will both win. Maybe the Giants give Seattle a game. Niners should beat Tampa. But they're both on the road. You never know what could happen. But, excuse me, we do have an interesting game with the Panthers at home against the Patriots. I mean, against the Jets. Probably win with your team. The Green Bay Packers traveling to the Dallas Cowboys. Right now, your guy, everybody's guy, Aaron Rodgers, is not playing. Your Cowboys, you know, sort of missteps kind of embarrassing. The Bears never punted. McCown was perfect in that game. Can the Cowboys turn it around against the Packers, who are getting healthier each week? My problem is I would go with the backup quarterback and not Flynn. I like Tolzien better. Flynn, to me, has just been sort of the Packers are 2-4 on the road. The Cowboys, they actually play pretty good at home. It's their last home game, 5-1. I'm going to say that the Cowboys and DeMarco Murray outdo Eddie Lacy. And Eddie Lacy is, you know, he's going to be close to getting 1,000 yards. He's 887, having a great year. Murray's right there at 8843. I say that he outduels Lacy, and it's enough for the Cowboys to win. And I think the Cowboys, you know, put up some points. I like them to win this game 28-24 over the Packers. How about them Cowboys?
Yeah, I think the Cowboys are a win-one, lose-one kind of team, and I went against myself in Chicago last on Monday, and I said maybe they could win a few in a row, but ultimately this is a 500 team. This is a win-one, lose-one team. They were embarrassed on national TV. They ran for 200 yards and yet still lost by 17, and we're not even in the game after the after that Alshon Jeffrey catch to end the first half. So
great catch.
I do think that a win-one, lose-one team lost one, and now at home with a lot riding on the line, just to tease you, they'll win.
It is December, though.
Yep. But they'll win this game. I think they win this game. I think you're right. Not having Aaron Rodgers means that the Packers are not settled. They're only a half game out of the playoffs at 6-6-1. But I think that this week the Cowboys put them out of their misery, and Cowboys take this game 31-26.
Yeah, it's just 1 week too late, right? You wish Rodgers could get back because it's going to be 1 week too late. Maybe he'll play the last 2 weeks, and maybe they can win by not having by having that tie. It just depends on what the Lions and Ravens and these other teams do. All right, so we've got, before the Sunday night game, the only other real interesting game that, you know, potentially can keep them alive, we've got the Arizona Cardinals traveling to the Tennessee Titans. The Titans are pretty much eliminated, but we saw against Denver that they can put up points. Fitzpatrick is, you know, he's
Fitzy.
Like, hey, you know, don't forget about me. I'm from Harvard. Back the guy in the Harvard yard. You know, I got to say this. Carson Palmer and Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd have got something going, and I think they continue it on the road. I like Tennessee's defense, but I think I like the Cardinals' defense a little bit more. I mean, you know, they're going to miss Tyrann Mathieu, great rookie year. But you got Peterson, you got Campbell, you got Dansby, you got all the boys. I think they can do enough to get a tough win in Tennessee to keep their playoff shots alive, where the next 2 weeks the Cardinals will play the Seahawks and Niners, and they could actually earn it on the field in their division, which is great with the schedule makers. I got the Cardinals winning a little bit lower scoring than I would think. I'm going to say 23-20.
Really? Okay. Well, you know what? I'm going to go at home field, and I'm going to go with Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I'm going to go with CJ2K. What a distant memory that was when he ran for 2,000 yards.
Gosh.
I think the defense holds them. They're both pretty good defensive teams. The Cardinals are a top-five defense. The Titans can play D when they turn it on. The Cardinals' offense is a little bit better, but you know what? I think that the home field is going to make a big difference. The Cardinals really, really need this game to stay in the hunt in the NFC playoffs. But I don't think they pull this off. I think that Tennessee holds serve at home. I think it's a low-scoring game for most of the game. I think one or two big plays. Kendall Wright, your boy, pick him up in fantasy next year because he's doing big things. I like this Tennessee team to win 27-23.
In the last game of our picks and the Sunday night special, not as good as it would have been if the Steelers would have beat the Dolphins or the Ravens, but Cincinnati at Pittsburgh. And I think if the Bengals win, they clinch the North Division and knock out any chance of the Ravens, being able to beat them week 17 and win the division, or at least, you know, tie it up. Or, you know, I think what we're going to see here is, can the Bengals handle success? And I think that there's no reason why they shouldn't win this game. But the only reason that they will not is because the Steelers are sort of playing for some sort of pride. I think that loss in the snow and Antonio Brown stepping out of bounds and the sidelines, and then the week before with the Ravens with the, you know, Coach Tomlin in the sidelines. Well, you know what? They're going to sideline Andy Dalton, and they're going to pull off the upset. And the Steelers and Ben Roethlisberger, who could be going to the Pro Bowl in the AFC, has had a pretty good season, Big Ben. I think they do enough to sort of surprise a Bengal team who might not be hungry enough. You know, they had a tough win with the Colts. You know, they kind of handled them. But I'm going to go with the upset. It's my team. It's my our last chance for having any fame and glory on primetime TV. And you know what? The Steelers win 26-24 over the Cincinnati Bengals. Who that? Who them think they're going to beat the Bengals? My Steelers, baby. Steelers Nation, stand up for Tay.
Oh, boy, as much as I want to knock you and as much as I think you are a homer and you got your homer hanky, your terrible towel right there.
You feel it? I can hear it.
Your yellow,
voice.
Terrible towel that you're shaking around there. And as much as I picked the Bengals to be the beast of the AFC North, and I still think they're by far the best team and they've had the best season, it hurts me to say it, but I actually I think that the Steelers have too much pride. I think the Bengals don't really know how it is to play from ahead. I think the Steelers still pack a little punch, and at Heinz Field, they're going to put it together. And if you know Antonio Brown, you know that he's frustrated from last week. And he's saying to himself, A.J. Green's getting a lot of love, but I'm having a better season than A.J. Green. So Roethlisberger's having a better season statistically than Andy Dalton slightly, and his boy Brown is having a great season and having a slightly better season than A.J. Green. So I think that if Le'Veon Bell can run and they can move the chains a little bit, a few big plays with Cotchery, Sanders, Brown, I like the Steelers. I like the Steelers in a tough punch-him-in-the-mouth AFC North type of game, a lot of pride on the line. I think the Steelers win. I think the Steelers win this game in pretty, I don't want to say convincing fashion in the scoreboard, but I think that they're going to win. They're going to impose their will. And I think this will be good, actually, for Cincinnati to
get
them ready for the
playoffs.
Le'Veon
Bell is going to run on them, though. Malaluga being out and you know, Atkins, Michael Johnson, like I predicted, has stepped up tremendously, but that's in the pass defense. In the running game, you can run on the Bengals. So I think my Steelers will win, too. So, listen, great show. For the people in the fantasy playoffs, we salute them and wish them well. Real quick, before we have – I got to throw out a little world premiere of from the rebirth of Truth Speaker – from my second album, The Remix, by my boy DJ Crazy Killer. I'm going to throw on a joint called Time. Real ill remix. Got to check it out. World premiere on the radio on Ray and Tay today. But give me one player, and this is by E Complete, a very, very talented MC. Give me one player in fantasy football that pushes somebody to the championship this week. Just one.
Harry Douglas. Atlanta Falcons.
You've been sticking with Harry quite a bit, okay.
I'm sticking with Harry Douglas because against this Washington defense that has basically given up, the team's given up. Kirk Cousins is now going to be the starting quarterback. They're going to be
in a shootout.
I think Kirk
Cousins is going to play well, actually.
No, I do, and I think they're going to be in a shootout, and I think that helps Atlanta, and I think Harry Douglas has a big game.
Okay, I'm going to say in his last attempt to do anything, C.J. Spiller, who's been splitting carries with Fred Jackson, goes down with the Bills, and they beat the Jaguars, even though my son, William Truth, is picking the Jaguars. That's his new favorite team. I think the Bills beat the Jaguars like 31-30, but C.J. Spiller puts up like 131 and two touchdowns rushing and could make the difference if you play him as your number two running back or a flex, C.J. Spiller. So that's it, man.
All right.
Get ready for a good sports weekend. You know, thanks for everybody's prayers. My mom is out of the hospital. Now she's in rehab, and we got to get Cheryl Taylor walking again. So continue to lift us up. We appreciate it. And, hey, man, we'll be back Monday. And
have a great sports weekend.
Yeah,
thanks
for
talking
sports
with
friends.
And take us out with some beats.
Yeah, man. E Complete. You got the mad set.
Think they need to know, but I done mastered the conclusion. Cause innocent is free. It seems that artistic freedom is nothing but an illusion.
Woo!
Mad contusions get delivered to the soul.
What?
And after repetition, the brain becomes dull. So please inhale it and just pass it around. And this is good for you since it comes from underground.
Yeah.
I can hear your heart pound. Dance, move, and make your body shake. Cause y'all, it's time to celebrate.
Woo!
And hey y'all, I said we are all free. So put up your hands and make some money. Forget the small talk and what's your name and what do you do? It's time to have fun and do what adults do. Or even have a drink and just party with your crew. Forget the news and the views of the blues. Just hit cruise and forget the fake clues. Cause the lies of this society will leave a permanent bruise. You can vote if you want, but it don't matter who you choose. The truth, my friends, has such a short fuse. So get the time for y'all to put on your dancing shoes. This is mental enslavement that killed all the brave men. So listen up because you better behave, men. Cause right now we're dealing with killing cavemen. So listen to me because your freedom is fading. Uh-huh, I say your freedom is fading.
My name is Ego Flea, got the head set.
You'll page me and I'ma hit your back. Oops, I guess I'm bugging cause now we face chat. So BBM me and I'll get the Google map. Or even better, I'ma give you a slow clap. Cause shorties nowadays don't have to give no proper dap. No stress, yes the future is a mess. But God bless YouTube and Facebook made me sweet on honey's dress. And yes I confess, I'm a pimp on Mac. But I met wifey there and she was the best of the whole batch. And like Miss Gaga, I'm ready to hatch on stage. In a lyrical rage, or maybe in a cage, or should I be PC, or even a little crazy, or keep it old school with the DJ is straight up amazing. No, it won't faze me, no, you can't phrase me, or make me mentally lazy. It's time to appraise me for what I'm worth, and that's spitting intelligent hip-hop on this great earth.
Woo!
The cost ain't free, and you ain't bossing me, and like Chris said, of course the P is free, and my boy Barack Obama's too good for a presidency, but if you talk to him in private, he'll tell you we're not free, 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 free.
When you're from,
this is mental enslavement that kills all the brave men. So listen up because you better behave, man. Cause right now we're dealing with killing cavemen. So listen to me because your freedom is fading. Uh-huh, I said your freedom is fading.
My name is Ego Flea, got the head set.
Live above the lies, to love our children and sing them lullabies. It's time, so open up your eyes.
Enslavement that killed all the brave men. So listen up because you better behave, men. Cause right now we're dealing with killer cavemen. So listen to me cause your freedom is fading. Uh-huh, I say your freedom is fading.
My name is Ego Flea, got the head.
page, man.
Right.
Incomplete, and you know my skills are